This is For the Record program number 1124, The Magic Virus Theory. This is being recorded on April 6th of the year 2020, and it is a live program supplementing the 12 programs already recorded and up on the website dealing with the COVID-19 outbreak. This program is obviously, the title of the program is a takeoff on the magic bullet theory as we reflect on the phenomenon overtaking this country and the world. We should not lose sight of the fact that this is a society that has accepted the so-called single bullet theory in the assassination of President Kennedy. That theory is not only physically impossible, but absolutely ludicrous. It maintains that one bullet created a wound in John F. Kennedy and all of the non-fatal wounds in John Connally. To do so, and by the way, if that one bullet is not accepted as doing those things, then one has to accept that there was more than one gunman in Dealey Plaza. That bullet executed right-hand turns in mid-air in direct contravention of the law of inertia. It was undamaged. The material left in the various wounds allegedly made by that bullet outweighs the amount of material missing from the bullet, which is at the base of the bullet. That bullet is in pristine form, and the bullet was found underneath the stretcher of someone other than John Connally. Again, I've dealt with the single bullet theory at great length in various programs dealing with the assassination of JFK, and in this society, the nature of intellectual inquiry and quote fact unquote must always be seen as being in the shadow of the magic bullet theory. There have been numerous articles maintaining that the COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2 virus occurred naturally and was not in a laboratory. There has been some back and forth between the U.S. and China about that. And as far as I can tell, not being able to read Chinese, the Chinese media treatments of same are relatively oblique and probably not intended to really disclose what they know about that. But again, I don't speak Chinese. What should be noted is the fact that any virus can be created from scratch in a laboratory. That has long been the case here in this country and continues to be the case. We are going to review briefly an article from the MIT Technology Review of February 15th of 2020. Biologists rushed to recreate the China coronavirus from its DNA code by Antonio Regalado, R-E-G-A-L-A-D-O. In that article, it talks about how the, quote, "The remarkable ability to boot up viruses from genetic instructions is made possible by companies that manufacture custom DNA molecules such as integrated DNA technology, Twist Bioscience, and Atom, A-T-U-M. By ordering the right genes, which cost a few thousand dollars, and then stitching them together to create a copy of the coronavirus genome, it's possible to inject the genetic material into cells and jump-start the virus to life. The ability to make a lethal virus from mail order DNA was first demonstrated 20 years ago. It's enough of a bioterrorism concern that companies carefully monitoring who is ordering such genes." But they're not monitoring the Pentagon. The point being here that any virus can be made to order in a laboratory. The mere configuration of the genetic material does not mean that it was not made in a laboratory. We are going to be dealing with an article from the Atlantic Magazine from March 20th of 2020 by Ed Yong, Y-O-N-G, why the coronavirus has been so successful. We will be dealing with scientific literature or scientific articles that are not easy to read on the air, even by my admittedly pedantic standards, but I will do the best I can. In this article, there is a bit of spun observation here, skipping down in it. When SARS Classic first made this leap, i.e. to humans, a brief period of mutation was necessary for it to recognize ACE2, well, it's a protein it infects. But SARS-CoV-2 could do that from day one. It had already found its best way of being a human virus, said Matthew Freeman, F-R-I-E-M-A-N, or Freeman, of the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Then Ed Yong goes on to say, this uncanny fit will doubtlessly encourage conspiracy theorists. What were the odds that a random bat virus had exactly the right combination of traits to effectively infect human cells from the get-go and then jump into an unsuspecting person? Very low, Christian Anderson of the Scripps Research Translational Institute says. And then she goes on to add, but there are millions or billions of these viruses out there. These viruses are so prevalent that the things that are really unlikely to happen sometimes do. Well, there are a lot of circumstances that need to be evaluated in connection with this. For openers, the article that we featured in a big way in For the Record programs number 1019 and 1020, bats, gene editing, and bioweapons. Recent DARPA experiments raise concerns amid coronavirus outbreak, this by Whitney Webb from The Last American Vagabond of January 30th of 2020. And excerpting that, the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, or DARPA, began spending millions on such research in 2018, and some of those Pentagon-funded studies were conducted at known U.S. military bioweapons labs bordering China and resulted in the discovery of dozens of new coronavirus strains as recently as last April, i.e. April of 2019. Furthermore, the ties of the Pentagon's main biodefense lab to a virology institute in Wuhan, China, where the current outbreak is believed to have begun, have been unreported in English language media thus far. For instance, DARPA spent $10 million on one project in 2018, quote, to unravel the complex causes of bat-borne viruses that have recently made the jump to humans, causing concern among global health officials, unquote. That's one project. Another research project backed by both DARPA and the National Institutes of Health saw researchers at Colorado State University examine the coronavirus that causes Middle East respiratory syndrome in bats and camels to understand the role of these hosts in transmitting disease to humans, unquote. For instance, one study conducted in southern China in 2018 resulted in the discovery of 89 new novel bat coronavirus, unquote, strains that use the same receptor as the coronavirus known as Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. That study was jointly funded by the Chinese government's Ministry of Science and Technology, U.S. Agency for International Development, an organization long alleged to be a front for U.S. intelligence, and the U.S. National Institute of Health, which has collaborated with both the CIA and the Pentagon on infectious disease and bioweapons research. The point being that the COVID-19 outbreak globally did not occur in a vacuum, but rather the DARPA, the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, has been studying exactly these kinds of viruses at length and in detail for some time. And this also occurs in the context of a well-documented destabilization effort by the U.S. against China, involving the National Endowment of Democracy, which is heavily involved with the World Uyghur Congress and with individuals and institutions involved in the unrest in Hong Kong. And the fellow coordinating the anti-China effort at the epicenter of it is none other than Steve Bannon. The dominant political and ideological influence on Steve Bannon is Julius Avila. Avila we've looked at great length in the past. We've looked at him in, for the record, 312, for the record, 947. Avila, by the way, spelled E-V-O-L-A, V as in Victor, was an Italian fascist, originally an adherent of Mussolini, but he came to feel that Mussolini was too moderate, and so he switched his affiliation to the Nazi SS, who were financing his work by the end of World War II. And in addition to the Pentagon funding of research into bat-borne coronaviruses, the following, and we've looked at this in other programs, from the New York Times of July 20th of 2019 by Anna, A-N-A Swanson, S-W-A-N-S-O-N, a new Red Scare is reshaping Washington. In a ballroom across from the Capitol building, an unlikely group of military hawks, populist crusaders, Chinese Muslim freedom fighters, i.e. Uyghurs, and followers of the Falun Gong cult have been meeting to warn anyone who will listen that China poses an existential threat to the U.S. that will not end until the Communist Party is overthrown. Skipping down. If the warnings sound straight out of the Cold War, they are. The Committee on the Present Danger, a long-defunct group that campaigned against the dangers of the Soviet Union in the 1970s and 1980s, has recently been revived with the help of Stephen K. Bannon, the President's former chief strategist, to warn against the dangers of China. Skipping down. These are two systems that are incompatible, Mr. Bannon said, with the U.S. and China. Again, quoting, one side is going to win, and one side is going to lose, unquote. That basically is a declaration of totalitary, total war. And skipping down again. At a Senate hearing last year, Christopher A. Wray, the FBI director, said the Trump administration was trying to, quote, view the China threat as not just a whole-of-government threat, but a whole-of-society threat, unquote, adding, again quoting, I think it's going to take a whole-of-society response by us. And in my opinion, the COVID-19 outbreak is just such a response. And the net effect, I suspect, may be for Trump to order successfully American corporations to basically decouple from China. It also may very well collapse the Chinese economy, which is to a large extent dependent on exports. And with the COVID-19 being blamed on China, collapsing the global economy, at least for the time being, that will not be. But again, this outbreak has to be seen as occurring not only in the middle of a full court press anti-China effort, but also against the background of that consummately important Whitney Webb article from The Last American Vagabond, as important a piece of research as I have come across in roughly 50 years of doing the work. Terribly important article. The Pentagon has been doing research into these types of viruses big time, I guess you could say. Now, again, this article from the Atlantic magazine is titled, Why the Coronavirus Has Been So Successful, by Ed Yong, Y-O-N-G, from the Atlantic, of March 20th of 2020. And some of the key points of discussion, because this is a very dense article. Again, trimming away Ed Yong's editorial observation that this really how does he put it exactly? I might as well, instead of quoting him, he says something like, this uncanny fit will doubtlessly encourage conspiracy theorists. If you leave that part out, and then if you leave out Christian Andersen's, but there are millions or billions of these viruses out there, etc. What we have is the following. What are the odds that a random bat virus had exactly the right combination of traits to effectively infect human cells from the get-go and then jump into an unsuspecting person? Very low, unquote, Christian Andersen says. Again, that is unlikely, and it must be seen in the context of not only the destabilization effort against China, but also Pentagon / DARPA research into bat-borne coronaviruses. Another interesting piece of information from the Atlantic article. The closest wild relative of SARS-CoV-2 is found in bats, which suggests it originated in a bat, and bat-borne coronaviruses, a major focal point of study by the Pentagon, or at least DARPA, then jumped to humans either directly or through another species. Another coronavirus found in wild pangolins also resembles SARS-CoV-2, but only in the small part of the spike that recognizes ACE2. The two viruses are otherwise dissimilar, and pangolins are unlikely to be the original reservoir of the new virus. When SARS Classic first made this leap, a brief period of mutation was necessary for it to recognize the human protein ACE2 well. But SARS-CoV-2 could do that from day one. It had already found its best way of being a human virus, says Matthew Freeman, F-R-E-M-A-N, of the University of Maryland School of Medicine. And then also Ed Young notes, this family, the coronaviruses, includes just six other members that infect humans. Why was this seventh coronavirus the one to go pandemic? Suddenly, what we do know about coronaviruses becomes a matter of international concern. By the way, the timing of the virus, it was first detected and right in the run-up to the Chinese New Year celebration, the most important holiday and travel day in China. That may have had something to do with the reluctance of the reported reluctance of some Chinese party officials to report the virus. That is a matter of speculation. Now, some of the unusual features of this virus. The SARS-CoV-2 is unusual in that, as we have seen, it infects both the upper and lower respiratory tract. The spike part of the SARS-CoV-2 virus is unusually good at latching onto a protein called ACE2, that's Andrew Charles Elizabeth II, which is found on the exterior of the cells in human airways. This ability appears to be fundamental to the virus's ability to infect the upper respiratory tract. The virus appears to infect the upper airways first, and then, as cells in them die and are sloughed off, it makes its way down to the lower respiratory tract and lungs where the deadly infections occur. This sequential pattern of infecting the upper respiratory tract prior to making its way down to the lungs enables it to silently spread asymptomatically before turning more lethal in the lower respiratory tract. We note that the ACE2 protein appears to manifest more heavily in the lung tissue of East Asians, as noted in the Whitney Webb article. And the article also, as we saw in 1019 and 1020, genetic modification has been envisioned as applicable to biological warfare to create ethno-specific biological weapons, and although the sample size is relatively small, it looks as though ACE2 protein manifests more heavily in the lung tissue of people of East Asian extraction. Another key feature of the virus's ability to infect humans concerns a protein bridge connecting two halves of the virus's spike. Activation of this spike causes the virus to inject its nucleic acid. Activation of this spike causes the virus to inject its nucleic acid into the cell. Activating the spike requires the cleavage of a protein bridge connecting the two halves of that spike. That cleavage is precipitated by the enzyme furin, F-U-R-I-N, and furin is ubiquitous in human cells. By way of contrast, the coronavirus, which caused SARS, had a protein bridge that was less likely to be cleaved. SARS-CoV-2 first latches on to human upper airway cells and, once there, has the protein bridge linking the halves of the spike severed by the furin enzyme. And perhaps the most notable observation about this virus so far, it does not appear to be mutating in evolutionarily significant ways. That is basically because it is already evolutionarily optimum. Of the 100 plus mutations observed in the virus so far, none has emerged as evolutionarily dominant, which is unusual for a virus that only recently jumped to humans and has spread prolifically. It is as though the virus is already evolutionarily optimized for spreading among humans, and there are no gain-of-function mutations left for it to acquire. Gain-of-function basically is where you genetically modify a virus to get it to infect other species or become more pathogenic. One of the interesting things about the way this virus infects, it infects both the lower respiratory tract, as did SARS-1, and it also infects the upper respiratory tract. And we looked at a number of gain-of-function experiments in which the H5N1 avian flu virus was genetically mutated to infect ferrets. And we've also taken a look at the deliberate mutation by Ralph Berich, more about him in a minute, of a coronavirus that was native to the horseshoe bat in China. He genetically modified it to infect human lung tissue and mice. One of his co-workers is a woman named Lisa Grilinski. Again, it is as though the virus is already evolutionarily optimized for spreading among humans, and there are no gain-of-function mutations left for it to acquire. As Lisa Grilinski, a coronavirus expert at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, described it, quote, "The virus has been remarkably stable given how much transmission we have seen. There's no evolutionary pressure on the virus to transmit better. It is doing a great job of spreading around the world now." There has been a mutation, as noted in the Atlantic article, in Singapore, in which some variants had become less pathogenic. Now, Grilinski, the woman quoted there, works very closely with Ralph Berich's lab. Now, Berich is the researcher, we've already touched on him, we'll come back to him. He's the researcher who constructed a chimeric virus out of a SARS virus and horseshoe bat coronavirus in 2015. And so when Grilinski observes that the virus wouldn't feel any evolutionary pressure to spread because it's already doing such a very good job, that is a very, very significant thing to be said. Now, evolution does not stop just because the status quo of an organism is already affected. A mutation allowing the virus to spread even more readily might be expected. And normally, such an event does happen, but it has not happened so far for SARS-CoV-2 because it is already at something of a coronavirus evolutionary peak, unquote. Moving something else. Viruses that are symptomatically similar to SARS-CoV-2, what produces the COVID-19 pandemic. Note that diseases that are symptomatically similar to H5N1 avian flu, the 1918 influenza virus, and the original SARS virus were all the focal points of genetic manipulation, gain-of-function experiments, and or recovery and recreation maneuvers. Now, quoting from that Atlantic article, in extreme cases, this of the COVID-19, the immune system goes berserk, causing more damage than the actual virus. For example, blood vessels might open up to allow defensive cells to reach the site of an infection. That's great, but if the vessels become too leaky, the lungs fill even more with fluid. These damaging overreactions are called cytokine storms, C-Y-T-O-K-I-M-E. They were historically responsible for many deaths during the 1918 flu pandemic, H5N1 bird flu outbreaks, and the 2003 SARS outbreak. Note again that the H5N1 bird flu outbreak, H1 bird flu was modified in gain-of-function experiments that were suspended in 2014 because critics thought they were too dangerous and that if these viruses got out, no one knew how much harm they might do. But the H5N1 bird flu and SARS were both focal points of gain-of-function experiments, including by the aforementioned Ralph Barrett. And as we looked at in For the Record 55, we came back to it again in For the Record 117, genetic material was recovered from the 1918 influenza virus by military scientists, specifically Jeffrey Taubenberger. There was an article from the New York Times from 1997 that we used in both For the Record 55 and For the Record 1117. Now be aware that, as we will see when we come back to the fact that Ralph Berich, who modified a chimeric virus by combining a virus native to the Chinese horseshoe bat with the SARS virus, he has been selected to create the COVID-19 virus from scratch, SARS-CoV-2. Let's hope that is just a coincidence. We should note that once a researcher like Ralph Barrett or any of the others who have engaged in these gain-of-function manipulations, once they have published their research, the designer gene technology, so to speak, that we touched on, we'll come back to it again, will permit the reconstruction of that virus in a laboratory in its entirety. Going back briefly to the 1918 flu virus, that was the Tyrannosaurus rex of upper respiratory infections or respiratory infections, certainly was the T-Rex of flu viruses, and like the T-Rex, it was an extinct life form. Scientists from the U.S. military recovered part of that genome in 1997, and then by 2005, that virus had been recreated, rather like a virological or microbiological Jurassic Park. In the Jurassic Park movies, of course, DNA from dinosaurs is used to recreate those dinosaurs, and eventually those dinosaurs, including the T-Rex, get out and start eating people. I think it is a question about just exactly what genetic what genetic material from that 1918 flu virus might have been included in some of these bat-borne coronaviruses that were the focal point of Pentagon study. And I'm going to, again, this is very dense scientific material from The Atlantic from March 20th of 2020, Why the Coronavirus Has Been So Successful by Ed Yong. To be clear, SARS-CoV-2 is not the flu. It causes a disease with different symptoms, spreads and kills more easily, and belongs to a completely different family of viruses. This family, the coronaviruses, includes just six other members that infect humans. Four of them have been gently annoying humans for more than a century, causing a third of common colds. The other two, MERS and SARS, or SARS Classic, as some virologists have started calling it, both cause far more severe disease. Why was this the seventh coronavirus? Why was this seventh coronavirus the one to go pandemic? Suddenly, what we do know about coronaviruses becomes a matter of international concern. Then it talks about both how the spike and the protein bridge that can be dissolved by furin help the beast to infect human tissues, and the fact that it infects both upper and lower respiratory tract, as we have seen. And again, note the following. The closest wild relative of SARS-CoV-2 is found in bats, which suggests it originated in a bat, then jumped to humans, either directly or through another species. When SARS Classic first made this leap, a brief period of mutation was necessary for it to recognize ACE2. Well, that's the protein that it infects. But SARS-CoV-2 could do that from day one. Quote, it had already found its best way of being a human virus, unquote, says Matthew Freeman, or Freeman, F-R-I-E-M-A-N, of the University of Maryland School of Medicine. And then the author goes on to spin this. This uncanny fit will doubtlessly encourage conspiracy theorists. What are the odds that a random bat virus had exactly the right combination of traits to effectively infect human cells from the get-go and then jump into an unsuspecting person? Very low, Anderson says, and then she goes on to say, but there are millions or billions of these viruses out there. These viruses are so prevalent that things that are really unlikely to happen sometimes do. Well, when you have the Pentagon studying these things, as they have done in the excerpt from that Whitney Webb article that I read earlier, and when you have someone like Steve Bannon, who takes his cues from a follower of the Nazi SS directing the anti-China effort, the appearance of a virus like that in the age of designer genes, in which the genes can be ordered and then assembled rather precisely, the possibility of such a virus appearing is quite likely. Talking more about this particular article, I'm going to reread a section of this, again, from Atlantic Magazine. Since the start of the pandemic, the virus hasn't changed in any obviously important ways. It's mutating in the way that all viruses do, but of the 100-plus mutations that have been documented, none has risen to dominance, which suggests that none is especially important. The virus has been remarkably stable, given how much transmission we have seen, says Lisa Grilinski of the University of North Carolina. That makes sense, because there's no evolutionary pressure on the virus to transmit better. It's doing a great job of spreading around the world. There does appear to be a less virulent variant that has cropped up in Singapore. The point being that this is a very unusual virus. It is already evolutionarily optimum. It has made the jump to humans with no apparent intermediate host. It comes and was even assessed by Christian Anderson that the possibility of this happening was very low. And I think a degree of self-consciousness, perhaps altogether understandable in the context of what is going on, can be detected in the verbiage used by Ms. Anderson and by the author of that article. But again, this cannot be seen as occurring in a vacuum. It must be seen as occurring in the context of the destabilization effort against China, but many programs about that, for the record, 1089 through 1095, came back to it in, for the record, 203, 204, and 205, and then in, for the record, 111 on up through the currently recorded, the program I am currently recording, dealing with the COVID-19 epidemic. Again, note that the viruses whose most severe manifestation can be seen in some of the fatal reactions of patients infected with COVID-19, the H5N1 avian flu, SARS, and also the 1918 influenza virus are viruses that have either been the focal point of recent gain-of-function manipulations and or genetic recovery. Now, the next article, this is really, really dense scientific material. It may not read well, even given my pedantic standards, but there is a, well, I'm going to use the word they say strikingly. This is not the kind of language one generally sees in this type of literature. The paper is The Spike Glycoprotein of the New Coronavirus 2019-nCoV contains a furin-like cleavage site absent in COV of the same clade by B. Coutard, C. Vallée, B. Kennard, N. G. Sita, E. DeColi et al. From Science Direct, Volume 1, 76, from April of 2020. This, again, is very dense stuff, so I'm going to do the best I can with this. Based on its genome sequence, 2019-nCoV belongs to lineage B of beta coronaviruses, which also includes the SARS-CoV and BAT-CoV-ZXC21, the latter, and CoV-ZC45, being the closest to 2019-nCoV. Skipping down, since furin, again, it's a human enzyme that dissolves the protein bridge over one of the spikes of the coronavirus, which then enables it to infect ACE2. Since furin is highly expressed in lungs, an enveloped virus that infects the upper respiratory tract may successfully exploit this convertase to activate its surface glycoprotein. Before the emergence of the 2019 nCoV, this important was not observed in the lineage B of coronaviruses. That's the fact to which this falls. Before the emergence of the 2019 nCoV, this important was not observed in lineage B of beta coronaviruses. However, it's the COV, like cleavage site protein, which were shown to be processed by furin experiment. It's a very dry scientific, but not even these scientists can avoid some over-the-top language. The following. Striking the 2019 SBS protein sequence, 12 additional nucleotides upstream of the single ARG cleavage site, leading to a predictively solvent-exposed PRARSV sequence, which corresponds to a canonical furin-like cleavage site. Again, this is extremely dense scientific literature, but note the language. Again, strikingly, scientists like this don't use that kind of language. The 2019 nCoVs protein sequence contains 12 additional nucleotides upstream of the single ARG cleavage site, leading to a predictively solvent-exposed PRARSV sequence, which corresponds to a canonical furin-like cleavage site. This furin-like cleavage site is supposed to be cleaved during virus egress for S-protein priming and may provide a gain of function a gain of function to the 2019 nCoV for efficient spreading in the human population compared to other lineage B coronaviruses. And basically, what gain of function means is an enhanced potential pandemic pathogen. And the suspicion here is that this was done deliberately. Now note again the ability to create a virus in its entirety in the laboratory. This has been true for 20 years. So when you see advocates of the magic virus theory saying, well, no, we've examined its genetic structure and we feel that it occurred naturally, that is not a statement that anyone can make honestly in this technological age, because any virus can be synthesized in its entirety in a laboratory. That is what the technology does. So again, when you see an article claiming, oh, no, we've examined the genetic structure and we think it was a natural evolution, you know, the authors may be wishfully sincere, but the fact of the matter is that one cannot make such a statement in this technological era. Now, noting again Ralph Barrich. From biologists rushed to recreate the China coronavirus from its DNA code by Antonio Regalado, MIT Technology Review of February 15th of 2020. The world is watching with alarm as China struggles to contain a dangerous new virus now being called SARS-CoV-2. It is quarantined and blah, 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 blah. But in one University of North Carolina lab, there is a different race. Researchers are trying to create a copy of the virus from scratch. Led by Ralph Barrich, B-A-R-I-C, an expert in coronaviruses, which get their name from the crown shape spike they use to enter human cells, the North Carolina team expects to recreate the virus starting only from computer readouts of its genetic sequence posted online by Chinese labs last month. The remarkable ability to boot up viruses from genetic instructions is made possible by companies that manufacture custom DNA molecules such as integrated DNA technology, Twist Bioscience, and Atum, A-T-U-M. By ordering the right genes, which cost a few thousand dollars, and then stitching them together to create a copy of the coronavirus genome, it is possible to inject the genetic material into cells and jumpstart the virus to life. The ability to make a lethal virus from mail-order DNA was first demonstrated 20 years ago. It is enough of a bioterrorism concern that companies carefully monitor who is ordering which genes. The technology immediately created bioweaponries. Researchers at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, drove that point home in 2005 when they resurrected the influenza virus that killed tens of millions in 1918 and 1919. This after, in 1997, military scientists led by Dr. Jeffrey Taubenberger recovered some of the genetic material from that extinct virus. Again, that was the T-Rex of influenza viruses. It was extinct, but it was brought back to life. And again, when you see an article that said, well, we examined the virus and we don't think it was made in a laboratory, that, well, they can say they don't think, but any virus can be made from scratch in a laboratory. Again, well, I can't stress this strongly enough. The remarkable, reading again from this article from MIT Technology Review, the remarkable ability to boot up viruses from genetic instructions is made possible by companies that manufacture custom DNA molecules such as integrated DNA technology, Twist Bioscience, and Atum by ordering the right genes, which cost a few $1,000s, and then stitching them together to create a copy of the coronavirus genome. It's possible to inject the genetic material into cells and jump start the virus to life, it said. The ability to make a lethal virus from mail order DNA was first demonstrated 20 years ago. It's enough of a bioterrorism concern that companies carefully monitor who is ordering which genes. But when you get someone like Steve Bannon, who takes his cues from Julius Avila, again, an adherent and someone who was financed by, an adherent of and someone who was financed by the Nazi SS, he considered Mussolini to be a bit too moderate. When you have someone who takes his cues from Julius Avila and Steve Bannon does, and when you take technology like this and put it at their disposal, what do you expect? And again, the very types of viruses that we have seen here were studied at length and in detail by various DARPA projects. I should also stress that the actual number of people who might be involved in any sort of biological warfare or virological warfare would not necessarily have to be very large at all. It's one of the advantages of that type of warfare. It can be done very effectively by a relatively small number of people. But again, the Pentagon was searching exactly these kinds of viruses. Steve Bannon directing the anti-China effort. Then something like this turns up. Now, another article that we have, and this again is by way of review. Lab-made coronavirus triggers debate by Jeff Oxt, AKST, from The Scientist of November 16th of 2015. Ralph Barrett, that's the same guy that was selected to recreate, basically using designer genes ordered from various companies that do that. Ralph Barrett, an infectious disease researcher at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill last week, November 9th, published a study on his team's efforts to engineer a virus with the surface protein of the SHCO14 coronavirus found in horseshoe bats in China and the backbone of a virus that causes human-like severe acute respiratory syndrome or SARS in mice. The hybrid virus could infect human airway cells and caused disease in mice, according to the team's results, which were published in Nature Medicine. The results demonstrate the ability of the SHCO14 surface protein to bind and infect human cells, validating concerns that this virus or other coronaviruses found in bat species may be capable of making the leap to people without first evolving into an intermediate host, Nature reported. They also reignite the debate about whether that information justifies the risk of such work known as gain-of-function research. If the new virus escaped, nobody could predict the trajectory, Simon Wayne Hobson, a virologist at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, told Nature. And note in that Science Direct article where they said, strikingly, and they noted a position of 12 proteins, I believe that's what they said, up there, muzzle, quote, directly, where it said it contains 12 additional nucleotides upstream of a particular cleavage. We should note, too, that once someone like Ralph Barrich or the guys who basically manipulated the H5N1 avian flu to infect ferrets, and that thereby creating a virus that was communicable in the upper respiratory tract, which is something that we are seeing with this virus. Once those studies have been published, anyone using the designer gene technology can create that virus or take parts of it and stick it in another virus. Again, we are in a whole new technological period. And Albert Einstein said about the invention of the, or the development of the atomic bomb applies to this. Everything has changed except our way of thinking. And boy, it hasn't changed at all. And with the likes of Steve Bannon calling the shots, well, it is anyone's guess where this will go. And again, this comes in the context of research into this type of virus. Again, from The Last American Vagabond by Whitney Webb, W-H-I-T-M-E-Y, Webb, W-E-B-B. By the way, that is a woman, not a man. From January 30th of 2020, bats, gene editing, and bioweapons, recent DARPA experiments raise concerns amid coronavirus outbreak by Whitney Webb. The Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, or DARPA, began spending millions on such research in 2018, and some of those Pentagon-funded studies were conducted at known U.S. military bioweapons labs bordering China and resulted in the discovery of dozens of new coronavirus strains as recently as last April. Furthermore, the ties of the Pentagon's main biodefense lab to a virology institute in Wuhan, China, where the current outbreak is believed to have begun, have been unreported in English-language media thus far. For instance, DARPA spent $10 million on one project in 2018, quote, to unravel the complex causes of bat-borne viruses that have recently made the jump to humans, raising concern among global health officials, unquote. Another research project backed by both DARPA and the National Institutes of Health saw researchers at Colorado State University examine the coronavirus that causes Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, in bats and camels, quote, to understand the role of these hosts in transmitting disease to humans. For instance, one study conducted in southern China in 2018 resulted in the discovery of 89 new novel bat coronavirus strains that use the same receptor as the coronavirus known as Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. That study was jointly funded by the Chinese government's Ministry of Science and Technology, USAID, an organization long alleged to be a front for U.S. intelligence, and the U.S. National Institute of Health, which has collaborated with both the CIA and the Pentagon on infectious disease and bioweapons research. And again, a lot of that is going on in laboratories close to Russia and or China. One of those studies focused on bat-borne zoonotic disease, by the way, that means diseases that are jumping from one species, from a species to man. Bat-borne zoonotic disease emergence in Western Asia and involved the Lugar Center in Georgia, identified by former Georgian government officials, the Russian government, and independent investigative journalist Yulyana Gayantseva as a covert U.S. bioweapons lab. Another U.S. government-funded study that discovered still more new strains of novel bat coronavirus was published just last year. Title, Discovery and Characterization of Novel Bat Coronavirus Lineages from Kazakhstan, focused on, quote, the bat fauna of Central Asia, which linked China to Eastern Europe, and the novel bat coronavirus lineages discovered during the study were found to be, quote, closely related to bat coronaviruses from China, France, Spain, and South Africa, suggesting that co-circulation of coronaviruses is common in multiple bat species with overlapping geographical distributions. In other words, the coronaviruses discovered in this study were identified in bat populations that migrate between China and Kazakhstan, among other countries, and is closely related to bat coronaviruses in several countries, including China. And again, a point that we made, and for the record, 1117, the gain-of-function experiments were put on, there was a moratorium declared in 2014. In other words, they were seen as too dangerous, and so a moratorium was declared in 2017. The Trump administration lifted that moratorium, and work on that, of that type was resumed. And I think the resumption of that work against the background of the COVID-19 needs to be very carefully researched. And again, noting what in that Ed Young article, what were the odds that a random bat virus had exactly the right combination of traits to effectively infect human cells from the get-go and then jump into an unsuspecting person? A quote, very low, unquote, Christian Anderson says. We are going to be going into some of the political, very profound political waves spreading out from the COVID-19. I think to understand this phenomenon, one needs to be able to play three-dimensional chess, as they used to do in the old Star Trek TV series, because looking at this one-dimensionally simply will not be adequate. We have been speaking about some of the scientific information. That scientific information must be seen in the context of political developments at this time, as I have indicated. We're going to be talking about various things, about the tremendous effects on government that were taking place in this. Autocrats around the world are doing what they, pretty much anything they want to use COVID-19 to do just about anything they want. I would note, too, that the virus is doing a lot of things that Nazis might like as well. It's getting rid. It's performing a eugenics function. Old people, sick people, people with disabilities, those who are medically afflicted, black people in particular, are being subdued by the virus at very large, disproportionately large rates in the U.S. All of these things are basically fitting a Nazi agenda. And we're going to wrap up, and this will be a series that we're going to be doing. The Nazi track Serpent's Walk that I have spoken about so often, the Nazi takeover occurs after the Nazis infiltrate the military, and then a biotechnology mass casualty terrorist incident involving Packold 1 and Packold 2 takes place. Martial law is declared, and the Nazis take over. Packold stands for Pandemic Communicable Virus. We'll talk about this in as we get into the discussion of the Serpent's Walk track. However, this is all we have time for today. This concludes For the Record program number 1124, The Magic Virus Theory, being recorded on April 6th of the year 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.